Hi, Bill Smaldone. Welcome again to Cable.
Hi, Bill. I'm glad to be back.
Bill Smaldone teaches history at Willamette University, his specialty, Germany in the 20th Century. He writes a good deal. Among his books are Confronting Hitler, German Social Democrats in Defense of the Weimar Republic, and European Socialism. He served 4 years as a radical on the Salem City Council, and he co-founded KMUZ Radio, a cable-like station in Salem, Oregon. Today we'll be discussing the Social Democratic Party in Germany. For many years after World War II, the largest political party in Germany led the coalition that ran the government. For the last decade, it's been slowly losing votes and appeared to be dying. But it revived in the German election last September and formed now the governing coalition. In that, Germany is dominant in European policymaking. It's very important in setting international policy and programming as to dealing with the many crises of our age, inequality, climate change, continued Cold War efforts by the United States. We'll be discussing the program of the Social Democratic Party and what they could and might do in the coalition they formed. So, Bill Smaldone, give us a thumbnail sketch of development of the party from its origins in 1863.
Well, it's hard to do in just a few minutes, but to keep it brief, I would say that the Social Democratic Party got its start in tandem with Germany's rapid industrialization at the end of the 19th century. And as the country urbanized and as the waged workforce grew ever larger in the cities, German socialists, who had been active in the middle of the 19th century but had a rather small constituency, were very successful at organizing workers. They basically worked in two spheres. On the one hand, they built a political party that was rooted in all major cities of the country and lots of small towns. It didn't have much roots in the countryside where the peasantry was still very large, but it did very well in the cities. And simultaneously, Social Democrats created a very large trade union movement. And together, the Social Democratic Party and the trade unions did everything they could in the pre-World War I period, a period in which Germany was a pseudo-autocratic state. They did everything they could to build a more democratic system, to win democratic rights for workers, many of which they were denied. They also worked to expand all sorts of social reforms that would strengthen the workers' hand and improve life for workers. The Social Democrats put forward a vision of a future in which workers would hold power, not only in the workplace, but also in the state. And they argued that the way forward was to fight within the system and to win improved political rights and social rights, and to do so as long as the system allowed it to make gains. They argued that if the system tried to repress the workers' movement, then it was the duty of the workers to make a revolution. And this led in the pre-World War I period to certain disputes within the party about how to manage their strategy. On the one hand, you had a group that argued mainly for reformist goals and that didn't like to use revolutionary language to win support. They believed that the party was primarily a reform party, working for socialism, but via reforms. Then you had a centrist group led by people like Karl Kautsky, who argued that the party was a revolutionary party, it was preparing workers for revolution, and that the revolution could occur in one of two ways, via gradual reform or via revolution, if necessary. And then you had a third group, a smaller group, led by people like Rosa Luxemburg, who argued that it was the duty of the party to fight for reforms, but also to use the streets more effectively to build a revolutionary consciousness among the workers and prepare them for revolutionary action. And these three groups within the party vied for influence. The most important one was that middle group led by Kautsky, which had by far the largest amount of support, and it dominated the party until 1914. The great moment of truth for social democracy occurred in 1914 when this international party, a party that advocated for international workers' revolution, basically abandoned that principle and rallied around the national flag when war broke out. And that caused those internal divisions that I just described ultimately to lead to a split in the party. And during the war, you had a division between those who opposed the war and those who supported the war and therefore supported the imperial state. The upshot of it all was that in 1917, the opposition to the war group was expelled, and in the spring of 1917, organized a second Social Democratic Party in Germany, which opposed the war. That group grew increasingly large as the war unfolded, and it was also very variegated in its membership, and it had a number of radicals, including people like Rosa Luxemburg, who advocated after 1917 for a more radical Bolshevik-style revolution. And in 1918, when the German people overthrew the imperial state, you then had a fundamental division within social democracy between those who believed that the new state, which was a parliamentary state, provided a framework to move towards socialism, and those who believed that it was simply a capitalist republic that needed to be overthrown. That group wished to set up a republic based on workers' councils, following the model in Russia. And so you had a very deep split within the workers' movement after the revolution of 1918. The result of that split was that for the entire period of the Weimar Republic's existence, from 1919 until 1933, the labor movement was essentially divided between a social democratic socialist movement and a communist party, which also opposed the republic. So the republic had opposition in the end from the right, that is from anti-republicans, and also from the far left, the communists. Both groups wished to overthrow it. And the social democrats, who still saw socialism as their goal, but believed that it could be achieved within the framework of a parliamentary republic, the social democrats were the main prop, the main supporters of the Weimar system. All of them were destroyed by the Nazi seizure of power in 1933. All of them, their leadership was either driven underground, driven into exile, or arrested and put in camps. And the socialist movement in Germany was effectively dead for the period of the Third Reich until 1945. In 1945, the socialist movement re-emerged in Germany. Initially, there were hopes that it would emerge as a unified, radical, Marxist movement that would work to create a socialist republic. That hope was dashed in the context of the Cold War. What you had then was the emergence of a West German polity in which a revived social democratic party, a parliament-oriented socialist movement, was reestablished. And in Eastern Germany, which was initially under Soviet occupation, you had the emergence of a communist regime dominated by a revived communist party. Now, what's interesting for us here is to note that in the initial years after 1945, in the West, the Social Democratic Party continued to be a party that advocated a kind of Marxian socialism and that claimed to be a party of the workers and claimed to wish to establish a system based on parliamentary political forms, but one that would also include a largely planned economy. And in the elections in West Germany, beginning in 1949 and all the way through the 1960s, the early 1960s, the Social Democrats were unable to win more than 30% of the vote. And in that situation, it had basically left the field to a right-of-center Christian democratic movement that also advocated for some government intervention, but largely for a market economy. And most Germans were more comfortable, especially in the Cold War context, voting for the Christian Democrats than they were for the socialists, who were often lumped in with the communists, who in the West were persecuted and eventually banned in 1956. So you have a situation in which the Social Democrats found themselves very frustrated. And in 1959, after much internal debate, they jettisoned the Marxist elements of their party program, the Marxist ideology, the focus on class struggle, and advocated a form of socialism that would be based more on, say, Christian ethics than on the ideal of class struggle. And this sort of opened the party to a broader constituency, one that made it easier for middle-class people and people who had earlier feared the party's atheism and so on. It opened the door to a larger variety of people. And in the 1960s, that enabled the Social Democrats in one election after the other to broaden their voting base, especially when they discovered a charismatic political figure by the name of Willy Brandt, who was sort of Kennedy-esque, and by 1966 became the standard bearer for the Social Democrats. And in 1969, he led them ultimately to an electoral victory in which, for the first time, they were the largest party electorally in the parliamentary elections. So for the first two decades of the post-war period, the Social Democrats were in a state of transition, and they don't achieve power until 1969 in coalition with the Free Democrats. They were still unable to rule alone. They did not have an absolute majority. Meanwhile, in the East, the communists dominated the state there and built up a Soviet-style planned economy with a full-blown welfare state. And there was a hefty competition between the Social Democrats in the West and the Communists in the East. And the Social Democrats were quite aware that they needed, in effect, to make sure that they offered workers enough benefits, enough gains, so that they could maintain the allegiance of their working-class constituency while also broadening their base into other groups. So after 1969, when the Social Democrats came to power, they were able to build on a nascent welfare state that had been created by the Christian Democrats in the 1950s and early 60s and expand it substantially. In 1969, Willy Brandt's slogan to bring the Social Democrats to power was "Dare More Democracy," and that brought in all kinds of people like students and other social groups that the Social Democrats wanted to win. But it also kept affiliated with the SPD and broadened their support among workers who were interested in expanding workers' power in the workplace, right, and giving workers more collective bargaining rights. In fact, giving workers the right to co-determination in large industries where they would be able to sit at the table with capital as equals and work out a better deal for themselves. So that was a really important moment in post-war German history. And for the next 12 years after 1969, the Social Democrats ran the government and expanded the welfare state, brought about co-determination in wide swaths of German industry. All German firms, for example, have works councils in them, which are elected by the workers. And this is whether the shops are unionized or not. This is a really important reform that gives workers a lot more say over their working lives than American workers could ever imagine. Right? And these were big achievements that the Social Democrats brought about in the 60s and 70s.
Hi, folks. This is KLU Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. You just heard Bill Smaldone, a teacher at Willamette University and writer of German history. He traced the rise and fall and rise again in the first 100 years of Germany's oldest political party, the Social Democrats. We'll now go back to Bill to conclude the history of the party. This history is important because in September of 2021, last year, surprising all the experts and prognosticators, it rose again to win the German election by promising to return to its roots, to speak and, when in power, legislate in the interests of the working class.
After 1982, the Social Democrats lost power when the Christian Democrats, well, actually, they lost power when the Free Democrats, their coalition partners for over 12 years, abandoned ship and decided instead, after the elections of 1982, to form a coalition with the Christian Democrats. And the reason why they did that was because there was a swing within the Free Democratic Party, which is basically a party of free traders. That party had moved a bit to the left in the 1960s, but by the 1980s, the free market group had again seized control, and they were more comfortable working with the Christian Democrats, and they formed an alliance with them in 1982, and they stayed with the Christian Democrats then for the next 16 years. And during all that time, the Social Democrats were out of power and were trying to figure out how to get back in. And a lot happened in that 16-year period. For example, the East Bloc collapsed, and under the leadership of Helmut Kohl, the Christian Democratic German leader, the two Germanies were reunited. And they were reunited also in a context of the formation of the European Union. And all of that was carried out not on the basis of the post-war economic consensus that was largely Keynesian in terms of its framework. On the contrary, they were all those things happened on the basis of the ascendant neoliberal economic model that permeated German government politics in the 1980s and 90s, but also EU politics. And the Social Democrats in that period were strongly influenced by neoliberal arguments. And so the party moved rightward. A major moment came in the election of 1998 when the Social Democrats took power once again, this time in alliance with the Rising Green movement. And for a moment, it appeared that under Gerhard Schröder's leadership, there was going to be a turn against neoliberalism and a turn more in a pro-Keynesian direction. But Schröder abandoned that very quickly and ultimately adopted a kind of this notion of the third way between the neoliberals, he argued, and the old Keynesians. And what that really amounted to for the Social Democrats was a shift to the right and a movement toward market-oriented policies. And this was a disaster for them because by bringing about a dismantling of elements of the welfare state, the Social Democrats, after 2004, abandoned a very large part of their constituency, the workers. And so they cast aside the working class, and they tried to expand their constituency into the middle classes that had earlier voted for the Christian Democrats. And as a result, the Social Democrats were no longer conceived by many German people as the party of justice. They were now considered just one more free market party that really didn't care about its workers, that didn't care about Germany's workers. And the workers felt abandoned and cast about for a new home. And some of them moved then to the left and joined the left party, which advocated a much more traditionally social democratic program. And some of them began to move to the right and wound up in the camp, not just of the Christian Democrats, but also of the newly rising nationalist Alternative for Germany, which, beginning in the second decade of the 21st century, began to win support in Germany, especially as people grew upset with the immigration politics within the EU.
That was the right-wing party.
That was the right wing, right. So after 2004, the Social Democrats in some ways forgot who they were. They abandoned their traditions, and they abandoned their previously loyal major working class constituency. And they did that in a quest to expand their middle class support. And as a result, they wound up fighting with the Christian Democrats much more tenaciously over the middle. And the Christian Democrats were able to win most of the time in that competition. So after 2004, the Social Democrats were not able to win German elections on their own. Interestingly, for much of the period between 2004 and 2020, they ruled with the Christian Democrats as a junior partner in what were called great coalition governments. And this occurred because in the German parliamentary system, in order to form a government, you have to have the support of the majority of the delegates to the parliament. And these are organized by party fractions. And so the German system often requires, if nobody has an absolute majority, it requires negotiation among the parties to form new governments. And for much of the last 15 years or so, the Christian Democrats and the Social Democrats ruled together, but they ruled under the domination of Christian Democratic prime ministers, right, such as Angela Merkel, who has been in power for 16 years, up until 2020. So that, one might also say, worked against the Social Democrats, because even when they attempted to recover some of their lost identity and to promote traditional Social Democratic Party politics, they really were unable to get out from under the shadow of the Christian Democrats. They lost their profile. And this hurt them in one election after the other until in 2015, they only scored 15% of the vote, which was down from 40% 10 years before. That's pretty catastrophic. And people began to think about the end of social democracy. People thought that given the rise of the Greens and the rise of the left party, and then the rise of the Alternative for Germany on the right, that social democracy might be about to essentially dissolve. That's why the victory in 2020 by Olaf Scholz is so important, because Olaf Scholz was able to lead the Social Democrats back to power. The Social Democrats won 26% of the vote, making them the largest faction in the Bundestag, in the parliament, and therefore giving them the right to take the lead in negotiating a coalition government. And they negotiated a coalition with the Greens, who got something like 14% of the vote, and then with the Free Democrats, who are right-of-center liberal party, but they're the ones who often shift back and forth in the center, giving their alliance first to the Christian Democrats and then occasionally to the SPD. And there has been a shift within the FDP to move in a leftward direction and join this coalition. I should also say that in 2021, one of the reasons why it was possible to form a coalition of these rather different parties. Social Democrats and Greens have a lot in common, but the FDP, the Free Democrats, are really quite different. And one of the reasons why all three parties came together was because there was a fear that if nobody formed a majority coalition, it would only fuel the strength of the right. Okay, and it's important for the stability of the state to form a stable government and to make policy, especially given the current crisis, the COVID crisis and the climate crisis. So that provides some context to the election of 2020 and the new government in 2021.
Hi, folks. You just heard Bill Smaldone on the history of Germany's Social Democratic Party that won the 2021 German election by returning to its roots and championing the interests of Germany's working class, also promising to deal with the great crises of our time, the viral pandemics, climate change, growing inequality and precarity, and the threat of right-wing authoritarianism. Next week, Bill Smaldone and I will explore how the Social Democrats plan to succeed in this, especially to model the way to stop the process of slow but speeding up global roasting. Bill Smaldone teaches history at Willamette University with a specialty on Germany in the 20th century. Bill co-founded Radio KMUZ in Salem, a cable-like station. His books are Confronting Hitler, German Social Democrats in Defense of the Weimar Republic, and another book, European Socialism.
Call my baby. Feel the calm.